Welcome to Manners and Madness, a Jane Austen and David Lynch podcast. My name is Maya Adkins.
And I'm Christian Cabrera. And today we are getting into chapters 25 through 33 of Pride and Prejudice.
Very exciting chapters. People are on the move.
Yes, new characters and...
I know. I think I have a new favorite character, honestly.
Oh, I'm interested to hear. Out of the adaptations, I always like this portion of them a lot, just because I like, I always think it's funny that Elizabeth comes to visit Charlotte and she's like, oh, I see how you made your life basically worth living now. Yeah. That's always so funny to me. And then, you know, just getting to see Rosings and go through all that and have Elizabeth be so, forward with her responses to Lady Catherine, which is really great.
Yes, we really get to see the gamut of the men who are attracted to Elizabeth.
I know. For her, you know, for her quote unquote not being as attractive as Jane, she seems to be pulling a lot of the looks.
She's got at least four people who are interested, who have been at one point interested in her, represented in these chapters.
I know. It's kind of crazy. Also,
we meet the gardeners who
love
the gardeners. Mrs. Gardner. She is, I was saying, is my new favorite character. And
the definition of a cool aunt.
I know. I was like, aspirational character.
Yes.
And between her, I know at one point in my notes I wrote, between her and Charlotte Lucas and... you know, Jane, you can tell that Elizabeth likes to surround herself with intelligent women, which I appreciate. Yes.
Intelligent women who will, you know, give her, won't give her like flowery bullshit. She's gonna, she's gonna get straight answers from these gals.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I love Mrs. Gardner. She's great. And then, I love Colonel Fitzwilliam. I'm always like, like in the adaptations, I'm always like, oh, they're like, they're cute together, but especially in the book, I'm like, I kind of want them to be together.
I know. I do really enjoy him until the last chapter, and then I'm like, dude, you're not as great as you seemed at first.
Yeah. It's like, okay, well, I guess now we have to go the direction we're going.
And man, is Darcy.
Darcy.
One of the most psychotic people. There's so many, I mean, maybe psychotic is the wrong word, probably, but there's so many times where I'm like, are you insane? What is wrong with you?
Yes, he is someone who knows that he is not good at talking to strangers or not being awkward in general, and yet puts himself in awkward situations almost like to a fault. Like he can't help it.
I know. He's like, let me be as awkward as humanly possible.
It's all, I don't know, it just seems so silly. Like the whole time I'm like, just tell her how you feel and that you're not actually mean. Sometimes.
Yeah, well,
but we're
not gonna get to it until November, but he will tell her how he feels and it will not go this awkwardness will last until then.
Well, it's like, you know, we're getting little inklings of, you know, what happened with Bingley and sort of why he left. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the part that you need to rectify before you even think about doing anywhere with Elizabeth, because Jane is her number one.
I know. We'll get to it, but we're definitely leaving with a bad impression of Darcy on our lips.
Yes, definitely. Well, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Awesome.
Start with chapter 25. Yes. Mrs. and Mr. Gardner come for Christmas. Elizabeth and Mrs. Gardner talk over everything, and an invitation for Jane to go with them to London is accepted.
Perfect. That's exactly what I would want to do if I was in Jane's position.
I know, you know, again, we talk a lot about the differences between the adaptations, but like, Jane is really ready to go. And I feel like in the adaptation, she's kind of like, oh, maybe, I don't know. But she's like, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I think what I really like...
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I did not mean to interrupt you in the middle of your sentence.
Oh, no, you're fine. What I was going to say was that I really love the aspect of Jane in this book that we don't really get in the adaptations, like you just said, of her being kind of like, you know, she's not really meek. She's like, oh, yeah, let's just go to London and I'll just write to her when I'm there. And then they're going to kind of have to see me. It seems like she's a little more like, well, I'm just going to confront this problem.
Yeah.
Rather than hide away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Jane has some realism in these chapters.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I would want to go hang out with the gardeners too. And
me too.
Like, yeah, let's get away from this place where I'm all sad and go hang out with my favorite aunt and uncle.
Yeah, who have, you know, a good amount of money and probably a nice place they live in. And you get to be in a London, like a big city, and just get to have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so yeah, when I was like, finally some maturity has arrived. We're still mopping up the last of Mr. Collins in the beginning of this chapter. So I just, hold on, let me get to the right page. But there are several times within the book where he is like, I'm about to leave, and I, Mr. Bennett, I am going to write you such a letter of thanks when I get home. And I'm like, why can't you just say thank you before you leave? Why are you always promising letters of thanks? It's just so weird to me. And I don't know if it's
it's weird.
A normal thing or if Mr. Collins is just a weirdo.
I think it's weird that he is like, by the way, I'm going to send a thank you letter when I get home. Like, just send
every
it.
Every time.
Just say bye and thank you, and then send a flowery whatever letter saying thank you again, because that would be normal. But it's like he wants everyone to comment on how, like, polite and, like, over the top his sort of, just he is in total. And he's kind of, like, trying to rise to the level of, like, high society, but clearly obviously didn't grow up in it and is not going to be a part of it. And so like, well, at least I can do all the actions of it. But he's so out of place because it just is like, you don't have to do all this.
Yeah.
And you don't have to talk so much.
Let's see. Oh, there's a comment by, I think, Lizzie, or maybe it's the narrator. It's kind of hard to decipher who's Lizzie and who's the narrator at this point. Although at first I was like, I feel like they are becoming the same person, but it becomes, there's a few times where the narrator comments on Elizabeth and you're like, okay, they're not the same person.
I feel like Elizabeth is, it's almost like the narrator is like a future version of Elizabeth at some points, because maybe. She is kind of commenting on Elizabeth. It almost sounds like she's saying like, well, back then.
Well, she points out her flaws, which I guess you would do from a future perspective. I just wrote down, the Netherfield ladies would have had difficulty in believing that a man who lived by trade and within view of his own warehouses could have been so well bred and agreeable.
That's that dumb thing of, you know, you live in that side of town, you must be horrible.
So yeah, dumb. Exactly. Which is true, because whenever Darcy finally meets them, he's like, I love them.
It's like, yeah, duh.
Yeah, Mrs. Bennett is going on, of course, to the gardener or Miss Gardner. Mrs. Gardner, it's funny the way she's like, I came in and I told them all the fashions, and then I had to sit around and listen to them talk. Well, Mrs. Bennett specifically.
Well, of course, because they're sisters, technically. She's got to listen to all the gripes.
Yeah. Her coming at just this time is the greatest of comforts, and she's very glad to hear what she tells of long sleeves.
Yeah, my book was saying that long sleeves were the new fashion, and everyone was like, we have to wear long sleeves now.
I know. I feel like this is something that happens in more than one Jane Austen book. So they're like, thanks for coming and telling us about long sleeves.
Well, you know, growing up in Florida, I'm like, the idea of like forcing people to wear that many clothes back then is like a little unbearable in my mind. But I also wonder if this was like a, because I feel like, especially like in countries that have a history of like Catholicism and whatever branches off from it, I feel like there's always like a back and forth of like, we're not going to super embrace like modesty, and then we're going to be modest. Like the fact that before long sleeves, they wore short sleeves and kind of had their bust like up and out. And then I'm sure with long sleeves came like, oh, well, maybe we should button up a little more and only show maybe our clavicle. Just, or
now that it's getting cold because it's Christmas time, people are wearing long sleeves.
Like, I did think about that. I was like, isn't it cold? So I guess I was like, would they wear short sleeves with a coat? I don't know. That's the something that's so out of my realm of understanding is like the amount of clothing items they had to wear. Like, yeah. I don't know anything about that.
There's a great conversation right and like near the beginning of this chapter when or maybe right in the middle, but where Elizabeth and Miss Gardner are having this whole conversation about Bingley and what happened. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, I put like a big thing around the entire conversation, but I just underlined a few lines of it because I was like, I can't possibly say the whole thing, but she's just like such a perfect partner for Elizabeth to talk to. But she says that expression of violently in love is so hackneyed. Pray, how violent was Mr. Bingley's love?
I love that section.
I know. This is great. The whole section is great. Is it not general incivility, the very essence of love? It had better have happened to you, Lizzie. You would have laughed yourself out of it sooner. It's just like, she's so like, you girls, don't get too crazy in your heads.
Yeah, she's like almost like without directly doing it, trying to offer advice so that it's like absorbed in like a, not like in a school way where it's just like, you need to learn this lesson.
Yeah.
She's
like, and I feel
playing
like
around.
Yeah. And Elizabeth is even more like truthful and realistic when talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, yeah, they're talking about Jane and going to visit with them. And she's like, I hope they'll not meet at all. But oh no, this is what Miss Garner said. But does Jane not correspond with his sister? Oh no. Okay. Sorry. I'm going to move. Mrs. Gardner is talking about, you know, won't she meet with them? And Elizabeth's like, about Caroline, she'll drop the acquaintance entirely, yeah. Which is very prophetic. But also, like, in the next paragraph, she's like, but maybe, you know, maybe Bingley will. You know, she's convinced that it's not going to happen, but she's still, like, telling herself.
Yeah, she's trying possible to. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
It was possible, and sometimes she thought it probable that his affection might be reanimated and the influence of his friends successfully combated by the more natural influences of Jane's attractions, which I'm sure if he actually saw her, probably would, but...
Mm-hmm. He'd be really happy to see her, but...
Totally.
Yeah. I think it's, like, that part of herself that is... that loves Jane so much is, like... well, I want the best outcome for her. So maybe this will happen and everything will be fine and Jane could be happy again.
Yeah, she's all being very realistic, but like her brain is still like, but I want Jane to be happy.
So maybe this will happen. I hate it.
Yeah, I know. One thing I can say for Mrs. Bennet, though, in this chapter is that she keeps her guests entertained. It says that Mrs. Bennet had so carefully provided for the entertainment of her brother and sister that they did not once sit down to a family dinner. Like the entire time they were there for Christmas, they were out every night visiting, and
having
I just
fun.
Was like, see, she does know how to, I mean, she's got her good qualities. She knows how to keep
oh,
people
yeah.
entertained.
Oh yeah. Time. I feel like especially like if we had some sort of jump to the future book where everyone is married off and it's just Mrs. Bennet and Mr. Bennet, like she's probably having the time of her life, like throwing parties all the time. She seems like a good host.
Yes,
but because she's got these girls on her nerves, they're all out of whack.
There is one thing I noticed from later on in the book that kind of pertains to this chapter, in that the Gardners did not bring their children for Christmas.
Nope.
The minutes I was like, I like these Gardners. They're like, let's spend as much time away from our children as humanly possible. They will spend Christmas alone with the nanny.
Yes. That was really funny because when I read they go back and they were all on the stoop waiting or whatever for yeah. Elizabeth, I was like, oh, they've got kids. That's interesting.
Yeah. And they're all like, we haven't seen her in a year. I'm like, weren't you there just for Christmas? Oh, no, you didn't go with
Nope. They said, Mommy and Daddy are going to Christmas by ourselves.
Meanwhile, we're planning a vacation for the grown-ups.
I like this kind of thinking.
I know. They're good time people.
They are. They're funny.
Did you have anything else from this chapter?
Nope.
I think that was all I have.
All right. Let's get on to 26.
26.
Elizabeth pretends to be serious with Mrs. Gardner, but is made to be serious when she receives news from Jane that she is anticipated. Ugh, that letter made me sad. I feel like it was a tear-soaked letter.
There was the last thing I wrote for this chapter. Or no, not one of the things I wrote for this chapter. That is sad. Yeah, it was very... Yeah, that is sad. Oh, but we do start off with them talking about Wickham.
Yes.
And I feel like Mrs. Gardner is strangely insightful about him, even though she doesn't mm-hmm. really clock him completely. Mm-hmm. But she does use the word interesting to describe him. And I'm like, that's an interesting word to use to describe someone.
Yes. I think I'm sure Elizabeth is like being very truthful with her and probably telling her every single thing Wickham has told her. And I feel like her being older and having more experience in the world, she is like, you know, some of the math is not mathing for me. And she could probably also tell that Elizabeth is not very serious about him. as we find out that she's not like super attached to him. So she's like, well, just don't get wrapped up in someone who is, you're not really even feeling that strongly about and who maybe isn't the most, stable.
Yeah. Even though she never comes right out and is like, oh, I know this type of person. You know, she seems to like Wickham okay, but she still is like, though, Elizabeth, you know, he's a poor and probably. But she's like, I know exactly how to get Elizabeth because she says, you must not disappoint your father.
Right.
It's like, okay, you know Elizabeth really well.
Yep. Yeah, I was... the whole like poor aspect of it. My book has this whole blurb about how since both Elizabeth and Wickham both don't have like money really, that they wouldn't, if they got married, they would not be able to support themselves, and army salaries were low and they were barely enough to support the officer, which I thought was kind of insane because it's the military. I don't know. Like I always figured like those positions are always like, you know, what's the word, like lauded, and they're like, we gotta support the troops. And
I feel like it's kind of they were that. Like supplemented by the looting they did when they
yes added to the world. Just take whatever y'all want. But yeah,
there's a great little speech about that Elizabeth gives to Mrs. Gardner about how she is like, I don't think I even put down any portion of it specifically, but like she's like, well, you know, I of course don't love him, but you know, if he were to ask me to marry him, I'm not like
opposed.
That much different than everyone else in the world. I don't know that I'd be able to resist, but I won't go out of my way.
It is really interesting to see, especially as we get, you know, introduced to Colonel Fitzwilliam later on, to see Elizabeth kind of like juggle the attractiveness versus financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like she's definitely more attracted to the attractiveness.
Oh, yeah.
Which is such a... I mean, I guess you could say that's like what a hopeless romantic of the time would be, but that's more so Jane. But it is really interesting to see her talk about both of them and how she's like, well, I don't necessarily love Wickham, but he's hot. And yeah. We wouldn't be struggling, but maybe it's worth it.
I think she really likes someone who she can talk to. Really, you know, well, because when Colonel Fitzwilliams does come in, she's like, well, he's not as attractive, but I feel like he's smarter, so maybe I like him more.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, more trustworthy.
Yeah. It does say, it's a wonderful instance of advice being given on such a point without being resented. So, like, they just have a great repartee. And then I wrote down, oh, Mrs. Bennet was, like, thinking about how Collins and Charlotte's wedding is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And she was at length so far resigned as to think it inevitable and even repeatedly to say in an ill-natured tone that she wished they might be happy. She's just so... I'm actually finding her to be the funniest character in this book. Like, I'm always laughing at her the most.
Yeah, well, she has, like, no filter, which is so shocking. Like, she's, like, willing to be rude to anyone. Like, even her friends, quote unquote. Yeah. It is really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's another thing that happened. For some reason, I didn't put that in my blurb, but Charlotte and... What's his face? Collins get married.
Yeah. There's a sad passage where Elizabeth could never address her without feeling that all the comfort of intimacy was over. And though determined not to slacken as a correspondent, it was for the sake of what had been rather than what was. And I was like, don't let your relationship be ruined. She only cares about you, Elizabeth.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, that's such a, especially like how old Elizabeth is, that's such a thing of that time where it's like, because your friend made a choice that you don't agree with, you're like, well, I guess I have to cut them off, question mark. Yeah,
we're dead to each other forever now.
It's like, okay, no, it's like, no, you could just accept the differences in your opinions. Yeah. Although it's like, your opinions are not very different. She just has that a different point in her life.
Yeah. Another funny, this is a narrator moment. Talking about Jane writing her to say that she had gotten to London and mm-hmm. she was anticipating her second letter. And it says her impatience for the second letter was as well rewarded as impatience generally is.
That would be
laugh. I just love Jane Austen.
She's just so, she has a way of being like matter of fact without being dry. It just makes me laugh.
Yeah. But we do get the letter from Jane. And it made mm-hmm. me remember that when I read this book in high school, mm-hmm. the first experience with Jane Austen, really, we really approached this book as a book of letters. I remember that being a big focus of what we were talking about within the book. And this, even though we have had Collins letters before, this I feel like is really the start of
letters.
Interesting correspondences.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's just interesting because Sense and Sensibility started out as an epistolary novel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jane Austen was really comfortable in the letter writing. She must have written a great letter. Get a letter from Jane Austen and be like, yes.
Yeah, well, I feel like there are examples, like photocopies of her letters in the book I'm reading. It's the annotated version, mm-hmm. which is really cool to see. But there's a lot of mention in the notes about letters she wrote with her niece Anna, because I guess her niece Anna was a big like writer, and mm-hmm. she would often send Jane like, hey, this is what I wrote, and she would respond, be like, all right, here's what you need to change, here's what this is wrong. And but
you need that as a, you know,
right,
as an artist, you need someone who can give you good critiques.
Oh yeah. And it sounds like, you know, that she did. It almost sounds like Jane Austen was like the Mrs. Gardner to Anna. Yes. Being Elizabeth in a way, the way that it's framed, that she would critique. But like, letter writing was like the stand, like that was how everyone communicated pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's such an important part.
Yeah. It made me again think, like, if Jane Austen was alive today, then I feel like she would really, you know, maybe she would have had like a blog or YouTube or something, but I really feel like she would have been an excellent stand up. Like I've said before, I feel like that is where she would excel.
Oh yeah.
Telling stories, funny, you know, to a crowd. I just think she would have been an amazing stand-up. Oh, and in the letter I wrote, I said, Jane, don't say such things. Because she's too modest. She doesn't recognize her own worth a lot of the time. She's like,
yeah.
Like when she's talking about Caroline being rude and like, you know, she's must be worried that her brother is in love with me or whatever. And she's like, though we know this anxiety to be quite needless. And I'm like, no, Jane, he does like you. Don't talk yourself down like that.
Well, it's like the idea that he had spent so much time with her had given so much attention directly to her and no one else. It's like, you know, it's really sad to read that she doesn't have that like kind of self-awareness and confidence that she should have.
I mean, I get it though, you know, because like when your heart's involved, you're like, I guess he just never liked me.
Yeah. That's your first go-to, because you're like, well, I gotta save myself.
Yeah. But she does show some astuteness from her observations of Caroline. She says
yes,
that it was as if she wanted to persuade herself that he is really partial to Miss Darcy. So like she could tell that Caroline was, you know, lying to herself, you know, not really being honest with her. I think this is before the actual second visit where Caroline's like a real total bitch.
Oh, when she's like in person?
Yeah. I feel like there's one, they visit first and then Caroline comes back and that's when she's like really terrible. And Jane is like, I know it's over.
Yes.
I don't know why she was treating me like this the whole time.
Yes. I think this letter is more so like how Jane is like, well, she must not have gotten my letter because blah, blah, blah. And she's not really corresponding as much as I thought she would. And it's not fair. That's what I was thinking the whole time I was reading it. I was like, it's not fair that rich people get to be rude and they don't get told about themselves in this time period as much as they should be, because Caroline needs to get cussed out. Yeah. Because she is so nasty. Fair,
poor people get to be rude too, because Mr. Collins is not rich and he gets to be rude.
Well,
Wickham is not rich and he gets to be rude.
Well, those are both men.
That's true.
Poor women could not be rude for some reason to rich people. And I'm like, who gives a shit? It's not like you're going to, nothing's really going to happen to your situation. Be rude.
Yeah. And Bingley is just like, really down in Elizabeth's opinion. She says, she would not even wish for a renewal of his attention. His character sunk on every review of it.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of sucks is that, like, both ways to look at it, either he's pulling away himself, which is rude, or he's being pulled away by other people. And like we've said before, get a spine, dude.
Yeah. Like,
come on. You can't make other people feel like shit because you want to make other people around you feel good.
Yeah. Think about someone else's feelings for once.
Exactly. I have no choice but to agree with Elizabeth.
Oh, and here's another moment where the narrator is like kind of making a comment on Elizabeth, because she says, but Elizabeth, because she's talking about Wickham and how he's turned his attentions to Miss Mary King because she's suddenly got 10,000 pounds. And the narrator's like, but Elizabeth, less clear-sighted perhaps in this case than in Charlotte's, did not quarrel with him for his wish of independence. And I was like, she's got things to say.
The narrator was like, oh, now she's silent. Okay.
Yeah. I see the double standard, Elizabeth.
And that part is always so funny to me when he starts going after Miss King, because it's just like Elizabeth's like, well, I kind of don't care. She's just like, whatever. I don't really care about him that much.
I guess I don't really love him. I know you really just wanted him to reinforce your feelings about Darcy, and that is
exactly
why you liked him so much. I mean, you were very attractive upon first meeting,
right?
It makes a special point of that, but
but it's like, yeah, like when you really break it down, it's one of those things where that's the only thing they had in common was the fact that they both disliked Darcy. And other than that, they probably, if they really got into other topics like as much as they were about Darcy, they probably would be like, well, we're kind of bored.
Yeah, it seems like Lydia and Kitty are the only ones who really feel dejected by Wickham. And it's like, okay.
It's like, it was like a little foreshadowing.
Yeah, Wickham.
Yeah. Die.
Should we move on to 27?
Let's do it.
Okay. Elizabeth sets out with Sir Lucas and Mariah to see Charlotte, but stops for some more chat with Annie G on the way.
This chapter.
Oh, Mr. Bennet gets so sad that she's leaving.
I know. It's like, it almost makes me wonder if, like, I know, like, the Mr. Collins thing and him being like, well, I support you, Lizzie. I was like, was part of that partially because you didn't want Lizzie to leave?
Probably because it's a funny way of saying it because it says that he told her to write him and almost promised to answer the letter. I was like, oh, you old softy.
Yeah, my book was like, this line indicates how much Mr. Bennett hated writing letters, but how much he also loved Lizzie that he would respond.
Well, it took him 2 weeks to respond to Collins's very urgent message.
Well, I have 2 points. Was it urgent? A. And B. Well, would you respond quickly to Collins?
Exactly. I said that she was going to look back on this sentiment and cringe. So let me see what it was. Oh, I think she's talking about Wickham. It says, trusting their... Oh, this is... I think Wickham and her are saying goodbye. And she says that trusting their opinion of her, their opinion of everybody, would always coincide. There was a solicitude, an interest which she felt must ever attach her to him with a most sincere regard, and she parted from him convinced that whether married or single, he must always be her model of the amiable and pleasing. And I was like, you're not going to look back on that thought and smile.
Nope. Especially like, not when he's...
I think that.
Yeah, especially not when he's married, quote unquote, you know. Yeah, exactly. Oh. So, I don't know why I didn't write this down, but there's a whole thing in my book about why the gardener's children did not come.
Oh, yes. This is exactly where it happens, where you realize, wait a minute.
Exactly. Although, like, the whole scene of Elizabeth pulling up and they're all waiting on the stoop because they, like, couldn't contain their excitement, it reminds me so much of Sanditon when Charlotte's coming to town.
Yeah.
They're always outside.
Parker children.
Yes, they're always outside.
It's like when I show up to my nieces and nephews, mm-hmm. or at least when I used to when they were a little bit younger, they would just like scream and attack me and like sniff me. Like, oh, we missed your smell, monkey.
And now they're like, oh, you're here. Welcome. Well,
they're still young enough to be sweet,
excited.
Yeah, they're not quite the same as the screaming rambunctious crazies they used to be.
Okay, so this note says that Christmas was not as significant of a holiday back then as it is now, especially in regards to like the idea of like presents and, you know, that kind of thing is more of a modern take on Christmas. And that, let's see, during the 17th century in England, because of like Puritanism, it was not an important holiday. And then it became a major celebration again in the middle to late 19th century. So it was kind of like the period when Jane Austen was alive. It's like Christmas mainly was like for feasting and just getting together and maybe a
still,
little bit of partying.
Really like to do a vacation without their kids.
Oh, yeah. But it basically was like, you know, it's not unusual or negligent that they left it behind because they would be taken care of by servants.
People thinking they were negligent. I was
oh,
just
me
like...
neither. I was more so admiring their choice. Exactly. I thought it was funny that my book has like a little note because it also says like, this choice has often puzzled readers.
Well, I wrote, where the heck were the kids at Christmas?
At home. Well, when you have multiple servants to take care of your children, I'm definitely
Yeah, I mean, it just proves the gardeners are well off. They can,
exactly.
You know, trade did not do them wrong.
Exactly.
Let's see. So this is a nice little, we get another scene of Elizabeth and Mrs. Gardner, even though we just had one. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we're stopping here on our way to visit Charlotte. So then they're talking about Mrs. Wickham, Mr. Wickham and Miss King. And she's like, I should be sorry to think of our friend as mercenary. And I'm like, oh, you kind of already know that he is, let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's kind of shocking to show that he has like no finesse with covering that side of himself, the way that he just was like, oh, what? She's got 10,000 pounds? Let me go talk to her real quick.
Yeah.
Like right after it happens, and it's very apparent. So it's like, that is a little bit shocking that he's so open and brazen about that.
And Elizabeth is doing like mental backflips to defend him. So, but this is exactly where I was like, Mrs. Gardner is my new favorite character.
Yes.
She's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm like, why couldn't we get like I don't know, a little mini novel about Mrs. Gardner and Elizabeth going on travels together.
I know. I think the last thing I wrote for this chapter is the Gardners aspire to live a free and childless life despite having five boys. Because they're planning their future vacation.
Yes. I think that's kind of all I had.
Okay, that's all I had for that chapter.
Perfect. Chapter 28. Elizabeth and party arrive in Hunsford, and she begins to see how Charlotte has ingeniously set up her life there.
Yes.
I love this chapter, yep. Especially like in the adaptations, because it's so funny for her to be like, oh, wow, this house is actually kind of nice. And then she's like, well, why wouldn't you put this room in this room and like switch right. them because it makes more sense? And then Charlotte's like, well, because then I'd have to spend more time with Mr. Collins because it would be right by here. So she's like, I get it. Yeah. Now. Yeah.
Elizabeth starts to really understand Charlotte more, I think, and like starts mm-hmm. to see, oh, it doesn't have to be terrible. You can set up your life so that you're like, actually, I don't need to spend that much time with you.
Exactly. And you get to live in a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Because they live in Kent, right? Isn't that like the region? Yeah, I think it's Kent, which I think I read is often called like the Garden of England because it's like so beautiful there and everything grows
what
there.
What book is it? There's Emma, when someone is like, I think, what's her name? Mr. Elton's wife is like, mm-hmm. I'm from the Garden of Kent. And Emma's like, isn't everywhere called the Garden of England?
I'm so excited for Emma.
Because I love our final Emma. Book.
Oh, I love it.
But we still have so many adaptations of Emma to watch. We should probably do that.
It's been a minute.
It's our next Jane Austen thing. I even laughed at Mr. Collins in this chapter, which normally I'm just like, you're not even funny, Mr. Collins. But it says that as soon as they were in the parlor, he welcomed them a second time with ostentatious formality to his humble abode. I'm like, welcome to my home. And then he walks inside, welcome to my home.
God, I like how also, I think it was this chapter where he was like talking and being like ridiculous. And then every so often she would just dart eyes at Charlotte to see how she was reacting. And it's like, oh, Charlotte's not listening to him.
I know. But I felt it was a little rude of Elizabeth. Like, every time he says something dumb, she looks at Charlotte. Like,
I know.
How are you reacting to this? Like, chill out.
Exactly. I think we can tell.
But Elizabeth's in, like, a surprisingly good mood. Because she's just, like, she's, like, in her Mr. Bennet mode, where she's just, like, observing everyone from mm-hmm. a distance and kind of laughing at them all in her mind.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's something to the English's, like, obsession with the French people around this time, because I feel like the French people, it's kind of like an old pastime to people watch, and so I feel like this is such a French thing to do, where she's like, well, I'm just going to see how people are, and it's such a very Jane Austen thing to do, be like, I'm going to observe people, and they're very interesting, even if they're annoying.
Yeah. I will privately laugh at you.
Exactly.
Yeah, there is a couple of funny moments where she's doing that. And then, like, let's see. Elizabeth admired the command of countenance with which Charlotte talked of the healthfulness of exercise and owned she encouraged it as much as possible. And when Mr. Collins could be forgotten, there was really an air of general comfort throughout. And by Charlotte's evident enjoyment of it, Elizabeth supposed he must be often forgotten.
That's why I love this chapter, because it is just like,
really, it's funny.
It feels like the narrator is like, well, I could be rude to Mr. Collins now.
Yeah. Elizabeth's like, I'm on vacation. You know, I don't really have any mm-hmm. skin in this game. I'm just here to watch everyone be ridiculous around me. And then she's not even a member of the family, so she's not like even expected to have to go to all of the stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't have to go out to Rosings every time. She can be free to take walks. And yeah, she's mm-hmm. she's enjoying herself, and I appreciate that. Yeah. I do have to say, because of the adaptation we watched last Christmas, Lucy Davis plays Mariah, and mm-hmm. I love Lucy Davis so much, but this was like one of her first roles, and She's so, I think I even mentioned it while we're watching it, but like, I just love watching Mariah in the background of every scene. Yes. She's so adorable. And Elizabeth doesn't really like her in this book. I mean, she's okay, but like, she doesn't really get, I feel like Lucy Davis just made her character so much more fun that now I can't not think of her when I'm reading this book. It's like, makes me just love Mariah, even though Elizabeth doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I think like, what's unfortunate about Mariah in this book is that, like, she kind of comes off a little bit like, is she supposed to be 13, right?
I think she's like the same age as Lydia. I think she's just not out yet because of their much more proprietors.
But I think sometimes she can come off a little bit annoying in the book. But it's like, just give her like a couple more years. I bet you she would be like, Elizabeth is the role model I always needed. And she would like worship Elizabeth, which Elizabeth totally would kind of love.
Oh, I didn't really write anything else for that chapter though.
I think I just have two things. Oh, the section where I guess they were walking around when they first got there, but they didn't have the right shoes. Basically, I was like, oh, they have like a little burp about like shoes back then for women and how they had to be like thin and delicate. And so that's why they couldn't like, you know, go over rockier terrain or whatever, the snow. And that they had just introduced a sturdier half boot, but it was only usually worn when going for a walk. And since they just got there, they didn't have their boots on. So they had to wear their
was complaining.
Yeah, exactly. They had to wear their tissue paper shoes.
Yeah, which I bet Elizabeth doesn't wear very often because she's always like, I'm going on a walk, let me put on my good shoes.
Exactly. She's like, I want to put these boots on.
Or else she probably went through a lot of shoes.
Yeah. And then there was this other little blurb about specifically Mrs. Jenkinson, but about governesses. And
they show up in their carriage. Yeah.
That, I feel like, is, like, the part where Elizabeth was like, Mariah, so annoying. Because she's like, oh, my God, something amazing is happening. You have to come down because I'm not telling you. And she's like, I thought a pig got into the garden.
Yeah. It's not even Lady Catherine. It's just Anna Berg and Mrs. Jenkins.
Yes. Yes. But there was, like, this whole blurb about, like, a governess and kind of what they did, which we kind of know since we've had a couple of different things with governesses come up in stories. But it also mentions that, you know, based on their social standing and if their Mr. Bennet had died, that possibly the other ladies, the other Bennet girls would have became governesses because that's like one of the best jobs you can get.
Well, and I believe that Lady Catherine does imply like, oh, I'm getting all these kind of half poor girls governess positions all over the place. I could get some for you. I mean, she doesn't specifically say that, but like, I feel like she's kind of like sizing her up as a potential future governess.
Basically. Yeah. That is also, I'm excited to get to that section because it's so like funny to see Lady Catherine be like, what do you mean you never had a governess? What do you mean you didn't do this? What do you mean you don't have solid gold shoes? What do you mean?
Yeah, Lady Catherine, she's got opinions about everything.
Yeah. She's very much a Lady Denim in a way.
Yes.
Except worse.
Yeah, yeah. More in every single person's business.
Yes.
Okay, are you done with that one? Should we move on to chapter 29?
No, I'm okay.
Everyone goes to Rosings to meet and marvel at Lady Catherine. Elizabeth is particularly condescended to.
Well, you know, Lizzie just kind of, she kind of invites it so that she can respond to it.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll get to it. Hold on. They get the invitation and Sir William is like, I am less surprised at what has happened, replied Sir William, from the knowledge of what the manners of the great really are, which my situation in life has allowed me to acquire. About the court, such instances of elegant breeding are not uncommon. And I was like, you're sounding a bit Mr. Collins-ish, Sir Williams. Or Sir William.
Yeah, there was a note in here where it was like, you know, when they first started on their journey, Elizabeth was kind of like not amused by his ridiculousness, but because Lady Catherine was introduced, it was like amped up tenfold because he was like, I don't know how to react. I'm not usually around this. And she was like, I'm amused again.
I wrote, what did I write? I said, that's a little rude, Elizabeth. Let's see. What
what number of things could it be?
Well, it's talking about how Elizabeth's courage did not fail her when everyone else's has. And she says she had heard nothing of Lady Catherine that spoke her awful from any extraordinary talents or miraculous virtue, and the mere stateliness of money or rank she thought she could witness without trepidation. Which I guess is not that rude, but it's just like, I've never heard that she's smart in any way, so I'm not going to be nervous just because she's rich. And I think that was the first point where I started to think, because during these chapters is when I was really contemplating, is Elizabeth a Leo? Which I remember last week you were like, is she a Sagittarius? And I've definitely heard people speculate that she's an Aries. So I guess we can definitely say she's probably a fire sign. But
yes,
there are definitely a couple things during this set of chapters that I was like, that feels very Leo.
Yeah, well, and you know, I mean, she's not wrong. Lady Catherine loves to say that she has the best music taste, or, you know, that a lady should always practice the piano. You should be the best piano player ever. I haven't seen her once touch a piano or pick out a piece of music or.
Right.
She loves to say how good she is at things, but she never likes to show how good she is at things. Oh, I thought it was kind of crazy how Mr. Collins was like, when they were getting ready to go to Rosings, he was like, you know, Elizabeth, it's okay if you kind of look like shit, because Lady Catherine actually prefers, like, people who are shit to look like shit and people who are great to look great. So don't worry about it. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Like, did you give Charlotte that speech when you were going to introduce her to her the first time?
Probably, knowing Mr. Collins.
Okay, let's see. Oh, they're describing Lady Catherine. She says that she was not rendered formidable by silence, but whatever she said was spoken in so authoritative a tone as marked her self-importance and brought Mr. Wickham immediately to Elizabeth's mind. And I was like, that's very interesting that that's who you think of when you're hearing a self-important talk.
Yeah. Almost like both of them are trying to convince you of something that you don't believe.
I know. It's like, well, she's thinking of him because of what he said about her, but still, it says that her tone is what brought him to mind. So, I don't know. Also, an illustrative sentence. Lady Catherine seemed gratified by their excessive admiration and gave most gracious smiles, especially when any dish on the table proved a novelty to them. She likes them because they are like gaping at her, basically.
Well, yeah. And I was like, reading into, they have like a layout of the first course and second course dishes and how they would be laid out on the table and all that in my book. And I mean, it's like crazy. The first course has 25 dishes.
Wow.
And so does the second course. But it's just like, it's so funny that she is someone who was like, well, I'm the best, and everyone knows I'm the best at this and this and this, and I'm the greatest. But she has to like put on this show to convince people almost.
Yeah.
And it's like,
especially interesting people she doesn't think are on her level at all. So why is she going out of her way?
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, after getting to like know her, that Lizzie is kind of comparing her to Darcy. And then when Darcy shows up, she's like, kind of in the back of her mind realizing like, oh, maybe they're not exactly the same, and maybe starts to break down those walls about Darcy just a tiny bit.
Definitely. Lady Catherine does have her most redeeming moment in this chapter, where she talks about estates being entailed away from the female line and how she does not approve of it, and she's glad that her husband did not do that.
Yes.
Oh, and when Lady Catherine is talking to Elizabeth, you know, grilling her on all of her childhood or whatever. and the whole governess thing, she's like, you must have been neglected. And Elizabeth says, compared with some families, I believe we were, but such of us as wished to learn never wanted the means. We were always encouraged to read and had all the masters that were necessary. Those who chose to be idle certainly might. And I was like, well, it sounds like an ideal childhood, honestly. You pretty much were allowed to pursue whatever interests you want to pursue.
You get to be a child and do what's fun.
And at the end of the chapter, we get some cards that I had to point out that the Lady Catherine and the men play quadrille while the ladies play casino. I was like, have we even heard of any of these games so far?
Definitely not, because I mean, I've heard of casino outside of this, but I think we've heard of quadrille. I don't know how to play any of these card games, so but I know we've heard about them.
Whoever's writing the paper on cards, or whoever has written the paper, let us know, because we want to talk to you.
Yes. I also thought it was really interesting how she was like naming all of these things, and she's like, you don't know how to do this, you didn't have this. And then I was thinking back to when Mrs. Bennett was like, you know, even though we only have like a few servants, like my girls are definitely not going to know how to be in the kitchen, because they are going to have to present as higher quality. And it's like the idea that like cooking not being a skill worth of a higher social class is so interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because it's like, I feel like the girls who are encouraged to be super talented are probably the girls who think they might have to be governesses.
Yeah.
You know, it's not out there to catch a man, obviously. Mrs. Bennett does not prize any of those things for catching men.
Right.
It's like a skill that you need in case you have to work, basically.
Right. Exactly. That's all right. I have.
You ready for chapter 30?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Sir Collins leaves Hunsford Police with his daughter's future secured, while Darcy's arrival brings a new friend for Elizabeth in Colonel Fitzwilliam.
Ah.
Good old introduction.
Uh-huh. And, this is also, okay, we get the dining part. This is the room where Charlotte spends all her time, which I just really, I think we already talked about it, but this is kind of where we see, like, Elizabeth at first was confused as to why they're always in this kind of back room. And she's like, because Mr. Collins doesn't want to spend any time out there.
It's the farthest away.
Yeah. So I was like, go garden. It's great for your health.
You want to be healthy for Lady Catherine. I thought it was kind of funny, this line. Elizabeth soon perceived that though this great lady was not in the commission of the peace for the county, she was the most active magistrate in her own parish, the minutest concerns of which were carried to her by Mr. Collins, and whenever any of the cottagers were disposed to be quarrelsome, discontented, or too poor, she sallied forth into the village to settle their differences, silence their complaints, and scold them into harmony and plenty.
Yeah, she's so up in everybody's business, and she's so bossy.
And she's like, stop being mad that you're too poor. Just be happy that you have one grain of rice for this month.
I think this might also be the chapter where we find out that Mr. Collins is actually kind of poor for the neighborhood, and so can't actually like really go to a lot of stuff that
he can't like socialize.
I wrote a heart in my book. Oh, because Elizabeth loves a good walk.
She sure does.
She enjoys herself. She spends her time comfortably. She gets to spend time talking to Charlotte for good amounts of time. The weather's really nice. It's like the beginning of March, and so I think it's like transitioning to spring while she's there. She has a favorite walk where nobody goes.
For now.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh, she's really feeling herself right now before Darcy gets there.
Oh, yeah. She's having a good old time.
Yeah. Oh, but then Darcy does get there and immediately goes to call on them at the parish. And Charlotte's like, this has got to be you. I may thank you, Eliza, for this piece of civility. Mr. Darcy would never have come so soon to wait upon me. And it just, you know, again, Elizabeth likes to surround herself with smart women.
Very, you know, intuitive ladies.
Yeah. Also where Colonel Fitzwilliam is described as not handsome, which I just thought was a funny way to describe a person.
Well, yeah, I feel like, I mean, I know it's not like important to the story, so she wouldn't have commented on it, but like when you say not handsome, do you just mean like, is he plain? Like, is he kind of like, he's okay? Or is he ugly? I want to know if he's ugly, because he's so nice.
I guess he's just like...
Is he just meh?
Yeah, I think he's just kind of plain and meh.
Yeah.
But he seems to get cuter the more you talk to him, because I mean, anybody interested in you always gets a little more interesting.
Exactly.
The last paragraph, though, of this chapter, I can't tell if Elizabeth, she's talking to Darcy and she's like, so my sister's been in town for 3 months. I've never happened to see her there. And says she was perfectly sensible that he never had, but she wished to see whether he would betray any consciousness of what had passed between Bingley's and Jane. And she thought he looked a little confused as he answered. And I was just like wondering, is she just trying to sleuth him out or is she trying to zing him? You know, I can't really tell.
I would say knowing Elizabeth, probably a little of both. She's like, I know you know what's going on, so I'm just going to kind of really poke at you and hope you give something up.
That's all I have for that chapter.
Let's see. I think the last thing I have... Oh, my book had a little blurb about the commission of the peace, quote unquote. The magistrate, basically, for like the local communities was kind of like their like law enforcement. But it could only be held if you were... someone who had an estate worth more than £100 a year, which means that landowners dominated it, which is like such a, it's such a interesting connection to be like, you know, like a lot of the common ideas about law enforcement today is like that it's more about the protection of property and property owners and people like that. And I was like, oh, wasn't so different back in the late 17s.
Yeah, well, this actually, this set of chapters was making me think of Death Comes to Pemberley a little bit. Like, it kept bringing that to my mind.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting, but that's all I had.
Okay, chapter 31. Elizabeth and Colonel Fitzwilliam get along famously. Then she and Darcy have a tete-a-tete over the piano.
I do love that piano scene. That's a good one.
It is. Colonel Fitzwilliam is just like making himself very agreeable to Elizabeth. And it's funny considering that later he's like, well, I mean, we're not really gonna, nothing's gonna happen here.
Just so you know.
But it's like, oh, well, you know, it's almost like how Jane thinks Bingley was treating her the entire time. Like, oh, you just happen to be the prettiest woman around, so I'm gonna talk to you even though I have no interest in you.
For my own amusement, basically.
Exactly.
Ugh, that's horrible.
Not because I have any actual designs to. But, you know, Darcy, he again, picking right up from where he left off, cannot stop looking at her.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, plus she's having like this amusing conversation with Colonel Fitzwilliams, and he's just like listening to Lady Catherine drone on, and he's just like, ugh. I want to be over there with those people.
What are they talking about? And what is she talking about?
Exactly.
I would just love an adaptation where they really emphasize that he can't stop staring at her. And she's like, what are you staring at? Leave me alone.
And the tables have turned. Mr. Darcy looked a little ashamed of his aunt's ill breeding and made no answer. Someone else doesn't have the best...
No.
Oh, I wrote, she's definitely a Leo. Oh, when she's like, my courage always rises at every attempt to intimidate me. She's like, I will not. You try to make me nervous and I will just roar not in your face.
Well, yeah, she like invited her to, she's like, you can practice piano, but you'll probably have to go to Miss Jenkins' room because... you know, she's got one, and you won't be in anyone's way over there on that side of the house.
Yeah. I was actually thinking of when Darcy comes over and she's saying it to him, like, you're just trying to intimidate me, but I will not be intimidated.
See how I react to Lady Catherine.
Exactly. He says, I'm not afraid of you, he said smilingly, and I just wrote, hot.
Yes. That's the point where when you're playing the piano, you would be like, wrong key, back accident. You threw me off.
I said, gotta love Colonel Fitzy when he is like, I can answer your question without applying to him. It's because he will not give himself the trouble. And that's when she's like, why can't you talk to strangers? And he's like, he is so over Darcy. Actually, I don't know where I wrote it down, but there's a point, because I was thinking about what Pamela said about Cooper Albert being Darcy Bingley, and I was like, could it be though more of a Fitzwilliam Darcy, and Bingley is more of a I don't know, they just have like this kind of, I can't remember, I'll see what I said, but there's like more antagonism between Colonel Fitzwilliam and Darcy.
Yeah,
he's, I feel like he's known him longer, like since they were kids, and he's just like, you know, I can make fun of this guy.
Oh yeah, and I feel like, you know, Bingley is like Jane, where he's not really going to rib his friends as kind of directly as someone who, like Colonel Fitzwilliams, who probably, like you said, has known Darcy his entire life, and he's like, I know this guy inside and out, like I can say whatever I want.
Yeah, because Bingley and Darcy, even though they're great friends, I feel like they're more of a new friendship, so they're they're like still in the Mutual Admiration Society portion of their friendship. So they're not to the point of like, I can make fun of you.
Yes, definitely.
As much. Oh, yeah, that's what I said. Maybe Bingley and Darcy are Harry and Albert, and Cooper is Colonel Fitzwilliam.
Ah, I like that.
I don't know. I'll have to think about that more. But because Harry and Albert are the ones who, well, maybe, I don't know. What do you think, Pamela, or anyone else? Let us know.
Yes,
which of these
please.
Three, Harry, Albert, and Cooper, Fitzwilliam, Bingley, and Darcy?
Yes.
I want to hear all your thoughts on the combos.
I love a, what would you call it, like a classification kind of exercise.
Yeah. And, you know, people are always trying to classify Darcy as being on the spectrum in some way, which I always tend to push back against in my own mind, just because I don't think, I feel like he's rude. Like, you can't just justify away his rudeness with like, but there is a part where he says that he does not have the talent which some people possess of conversing easily with those I've never met before. I can't catch the tone of their conversation or appear interested in their concerns as I often see done. And I was like, well, that sounds like someone who maybe has a little autism or something, you know, like,
yeah,
I can't really catch tone so much.
Yeah, like social cues.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then maybe like, yeah, maybe just not feeling the amount of empathy in someone that you would see other people feel. I feel like that is somewhat of an on the spectrum kind of deal.
Yeah.
I feel like. And, but also I feel like part of it is also like, was it his upbringing? Was he sort of, you know, taught that, you know, what everyone else thinks is, who cares? Like, it's what really matters is what you think.
Exactly. To Elizabeth's point, you've never practiced or tried to, you know, catch tone.
Exactly. You have to talk to
people.
What
does your sister think of that?
Exactly.
Okay. 32.
Yes.
Oh, unless you want to have more.
Nope. That was all I had.
Okay.
All right. Chapter 32. Darcy makes a surprise visit to the parsonage, only to make it somehow more awkward between him and Elizabeth. There's also speculation on if Elizabeth should get with Fitzwilliam, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, this is a crazy...
Even though it gets crushed.
I know, in the next chapter. But this is kind of a crazy, crazy scene.
Mm-hmm. It's always funny.
It's just so weird the way he, like, bursts in, and then he's so... Like, she's talking to him about Mr. Bingley, because, you know, that's really all she really cares about. She
comes to
Darcy, like, I just want to know what is happening with my sister's sake.
Right.
And she's like, do you think he's ever going to return to Netherfield? And he's like, I've never heard him say so, but it is probable that he may spend very little of his time there in the future. He has many friends and is at a time of his life when friends and engagements are continually increasing. And I was like, Darcy, do not piss me off again.
Well, it's like, you know, it feels like the conversation that he and Elizabeth had over the piano has really struck a chord with him. And he's like, okay, well, maybe I should practice more. And since I sort of secretly like her, maybe I'll practice with her because she seems really good at it. And so it's like he like convinced himself that morning. He's like, all right, I'm going to go over and this is what I'm going to say. This is what's going to happen. And then like the minute he got there, he was like, oh, she's the only one here. But I have to go through with it because I'm already here.
It's strange, though. I almost feel like during this conversation, he's already thinking of Elizabeth as his future wife. Like he's kind of like subtly hinting around about it. And it's like, dude, why is this already what you're building up in your head? You have not even convinced her to like you yet.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think it goes back to his upbringing. He probably was like made to believe that all that matters is that he's insanely wealthy and he's good looking and that it's like, you know, people would be foolish not to want to be with you. And so in his mind, he's like, she can't possibly say no if I ask her because she's poor. And, you know, what matters most is what I think. And
yeah, he's so awkward about it. There's like,
yeah,
what is it? I mean, you're so weird sometimes. When he's like, first he draws his chair towards her and he's like, you cannot have a right to such very strong local attachment. You cannot always have been at Longbourn. And she's like, what? He's like, oh. And then he pulls his chair back. And I'm like, what are you even talking about, you weirdo?
He's trying to sort of make like small talk. And she's like, it's like he is picking up on the signals because she's like trying to like signal like, what is going on? And he's like, yeah. Okay, she's not liking this, so let me do the opposite and say nothing.
But she's very strangely candid with him because they're talking about Mr. Collins and Charlotte and like, oh, Mr. Collins found a good match. And she's like, I'm not certain that I consider her marrying Mr. Collins as the wisest thing she ever did. And I was like, that seems so like, I just feel like you wouldn't say that to someone unless you were like more comfortable with them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on some level at this point, you kind of have to assume that she unconsciously is sort of really feeling comfortable with him, really starting to kind of gravitate towards him because of how frank she is with him. Saying that specific line also knowing that he probably feels the exact same about Mr. Collins and how annoying he is, that she would feel supported in saying that.
Yeah, exactly. Charlotte comes home, Darcy runs away, Charlotte's like, he must be in love with you or something.
And Elizabeth is like, me? You're crazy.
And then she's thinking about how Colonel Fitzwilliam has an evident admiration of her. And this episode's going so long.
You're fine.
I said the Charlotte Appreciation Society. I don't know what.
I love Charlotte. Because she's just like, girl, he likes you, clearly.
Yeah.
She ain't stupid.
Yeah, because she's sitting there and she's like, she's just like thinking of like, well, how can I make Elizabeth happy? Like, I bet she'd really like Mr. Darcy if he really liked her, you know, and or maybe for Colonel Fitzwilliams, you know, she's just thinking of like ways that Elizabeth can be happy in her future. And I just, you know, I love Charlie. She's so good.
Me too.
Last chapter. Do you have one more thing? Sorry.
I have one more thing. My book had this note that was like, Elizabeth's admiration for Colonel Fitzwilliams reveals another blind spot in her judgment of Darcy, for she never stops to consider how a man whom she regards as despicable could be close friends with a worthy man such as the Colonel.
True. But I mean, we already saw that to be the case with Bingley.
Right. Well, it's just like, she's so fixated on not liking Darcy that she tricks herself into liking
shouldn't
him.
Shouldn't have made fun of her. Said she was ugly first thing.
Right. But you know, that's one of her flaws, is that she never stops to think like, maybe my opinion of him is wrong.
Yeah, prejudice. So chapter 33, our last chapter before we break for a little while.
Yes.
Elizabeth has to reckon with several increasingly disturbing truths while on a walk with Colonel Fitzwilliam.
Oh gosh, this is the chapter where she's like going on her walks that are supposed to be by herself, and she's like, what are these people doing here?
Okay, yeah, there's
William shows up.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so this is also where I was like, I feel like Darcy is already thinking of her as his future wife, because he keeps showing up on her walks that she specifically was like, I like this walk in case you want to avoid me in the future. And she's like, I can't understand why he keeps showing up on this walk. I told him I'd take him. But he says, or she says, he seemed to expect that whenever she came into Kent again, she would be staying there too. or speaking of rosings, and it's like, that's just a weird kind of thing to imply. Like, oh, you'll be staying at Lady Catherine's when you come back into town. Like, what? It's just, there's a lot of puzzling things.
She just, yeah. Going on. Well,
we're not hearing what's in Darcy's head at the moment, which right. we had been a lot. So
she's just, and I feel like that's purposeful because we want this section of the book to be like, does he like her again? Does he not like her again? Because is he sort of doing these things because he sees her and Colonel Fitzwilliam together and he is like, well, she's gonna be around forever. And so there's a lot of this like, oh, is it for Colonel Fitzwilliam or is it for Darcy? And I like kind of the ambiguity right. of it.
That's true. Yeah, it's trying not to give everything away, which I am doing if you haven't read the book, so I'm sorry. But yeah. But hopefully you've seen an adaptation before. But yeah, there's a lot of hints as to what is about to happen. Like Fitzwilliam says that Darcy has been putting off them leaving. Like, mm-hmm. if he doesn't put it off again. And like, okay. And then he basically tells her, you know, well, I'm a second son and I need more money than you can provide, which is kind of awkward.
You're too poor for me because I'm not going to be filthy rich. I'm just going to be regular rich.
Which I think you're rich enough that it shouldn't yeah. matter. But obviously you have expensive tastes or
of
something.
Course. Of course. He's accustomed to a certain lifestyle.
Yeah. And then he, this whole, yeah. You're like, so like, oh, I wonder, is she going to get with Fitzwilliam? And then this chapter happens and you're like, ugh, I don't know if I even like you anymore. Because then yeah. he starts talking about Jane and Darcy's Bingley. I mean, he doesn't know he's talking about Jane, but he's talking right. about Bingley and how Darcy got him away from a bad situation. And I just wrote, you know, when you put a bunch of ampersands and stuff to make mm-hmm. cursing, that's what
yes
when he says, I understood that there were some very strong objections against the lady.
Yeah, that's like, and well, and I feel like it, if it sort of stopped around there, then it would be sort of fine, like, because it kind of gives Colonel Fitzwilliam the out of being like, well, this is all I know, like, must have been something wrong with her. I don't know anything, but I feel like there's like a little bit more he goes into where about like her connections or something.
Yeah.
And then that's what kind of really sours him, at least in my mind, and Elizabeth's, obviously.
Yeah.
Because she's like, you know, he has no qualms about talking shit about this girl.
Oh yeah. Darcy's so in big like, trouble after this conversation.
Oh yeah.
Like, she's like, I cannot believe he would think this about my sister. What a douchebag.
My perfect angel sister.
It's such a crazy moment for us to stop at because, like, Darcy is so in the doghouse right now. Mm-hmm. And we know what is, like, literally going to happen in the next chapter, I'm pretty sure. And
yeah,
there's, yep. I mean, November is going to be a fun ride. The
ending it sure of this book. Is. We're going to kick it off with a bang.
Yeah. I feel like all the best stuff happens in the second half. Although I've really enjoyed the first half, but now I'm like,
second half is when
so
it,
much to come.
Yeah, where it really kicks into gear. A lot of stuff starts happening really fast.
Exactly. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about that chapter? Or
I don't think so. I think it's a really good spot to sort of take our Fire Walk With Me break, just because yeah. we are kind of left with the same feelings that Lizzie has. And, you know, those of us who've either read the book or watch adaptations know sort of what's coming up, and it's like the anticipation of it is so good.
Right.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too. It's a huge turning point, and yeah, I think, and I'm really excited to watch Fire Walk With Me. I think
me too.
That's going to be a really fun thing to cover. And I'm interested to see, because we've always done the books with a Twin Peaks, major Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested to see how we can find that it relates to Pride and Prejudice, mm-hmm. or if it colors our future reading of it, because, you know.
That's a good point.
And I'm just excited for you to see it. It's so good.
Me too. I feel like that is such a piece of Twin Peaks, like the cinematic universe of Twin Peaks, that is so important that everyone talks mm-hmm. about. And I'm like, finally I'm getting a look into one of the most like vital pieces of the puzzle.
I know. I mean, so many people have been like, oh, Firewalk with Me. I'm so excited that you're watching it.
I'm just ready. I am a little scared that we might get more scary Bob, but
I'll it's hold October, strong. So it's perfect. And exactly. I honestly, it's definitely more appropriate for October than Pride and Prejudice, which will be great for November, kicking off the holidays.
Exactly. I agree. I'm excited.
Yes. So if you're only here for Pride and Prejudice, then we will see you again in November.
Yes.
But if you've watched Twin Peaks at all, then you should definitely watch Firewalk with Me with
yes.
us.
Yes. I encourage
And if you haven't watched Twin Peaks, then you should watch Twin Peaks.
It's that's really a good, that's a good, you know, late September / October binge if you're wanting to listen to
Firewalk. It's not too scary, you know. Firewalk mm-hmm. is probably a little bit scarier than Twin Peaks in general, but if you haven't watched Twin Peaks, you should definitely watch it.
Yes, I agree.
I wouldn't start with Firewalk with Me, though.
No, it might be a little
lost. It's technically a prequel, but it will ruin a lot of stuff in the show for you.
Yes.
All right. Well, we went especially long on this episode, but, you know, we had a lot to say.
Yeah, these are vital chapters, very important, and, you know, we had things to say.
Great distances.
Exactly.
We met many new characters.
50 miles. It's a long time.
It's a long trip.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week with Firewalk with Me.
Good night.
Bye. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can DM us on Instagram at Manners and Madness Pod, or you can DM us on Twitter at Manners Madness, or you can email us at Gmail using mannersandmadness@gmail.com. And if you would like to leave a voice message on our website, you can at mannersandmadness.com, and it's about a minute long.
Yes. And we would absolutely love it if you would give us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify or the podcast app of your choice. It really means a lot to us and helps get more people to listen to the podcast. Also, we have a donate button, which is on our website, mannersandmadness.com, as well.
Absolutely. Any help is very much appreciated.
Very much.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Good night.
Bye.
Cooper, hush. I'm trying to record a podcast.
Cooper, are you silly? I know.